Once again, we're thankful for everyone that's here. And somebody have something on your heart, I'll certainly make a way for that if you have a testimony or anything before we get started this morning. If not, I'm going to ask you to, if you will, to turn with me to the book of Genesis, to the book of Genesis in the 22nd chapter of Genesis. And the title of my message this morning is, Are You Willing? Are You Really Willing? Are You Willing? In the book of Genesis, 22nd chapter, beginning at the first verse, I'm going to read about the first 19 verses, and it'll be a passage that's familiar to most of us. It says, And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and he saddled his ass, and he took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up, and went into the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told them of, and Abraham built an altar there, and he laid the wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son, and he laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son, and the angel of the Lord called unto him out of the heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou any thing unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, In the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of the heaven the second time, and he said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned unto the young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt in Beersheba. My text and my thought would come from that 10th verse where it says, And Abraham stretched forth his hand, and he took the knife to slay his son. See, he was willing. He was really willing, right down to the very last second. You know, as we think about this passage, to me, it's always been one of the most difficult passages in the whole scripture, because it seems as though that God is contradicting himself. Because we find out throughout all of the scriptures that God abhorred human sacrifice. And yet here it seems, I reemphasize that word, it seems as though God is commanding Abraham to do something which he himself abhors. It seems to be a contradiction. But let's see if we can examine that and understand a little bit more what this is all about. And certainly it still applies to us as well if we understand that. The one thing that we find out is if we look at history and study religions and all cultures, that in all early primitive religions, In all cultures, human sacrifice was well known. Human sacrifice was practiced in nearly every early religion, idolatrous religion. And Abraham, we know, came out of Ur of the Chaldees, and he came out from among the heathen. And we know from historical accounts, or from archaeological records, I should say, we know that human sacrifice was practiced in among the people that Abraham dwelt among. He dwelt among the Canaanites and the Philistines, and the Canaanites particularly, and their religion. There was two things that was involved. One was the loose moral sexual activity, and the other was human sacrifice. And as Abraham dwelt in among those people of Canaan, God had said to him, I'm going to give you this land, but the iniquities of the Amorites is not yet full. And so God delayed bringing judgment upon those people, and even though he promised it to Abraham, and this was part of it, of the terrible way in which that they worshiped their gods, and multiple deities that they worship, one of them being particularly Moloch. And so here is the proposal that comes to Abraham's mind. And I want you to think about this, that what is God is really saying to Abraham is, do you love me as much as those about you love their God? Can you do the same for Jehovah that they do for Moloch? They offer their children unto them, their gods. And even though God abhorred it, yet the question came to Abraham's mind, do I love my God as much as I love Isaac? Remember, Isaac was the child of promise. Isaac was the child that they had in their old age. And Abraham loved him. The name Isaac means laughter and joy. And so he loved him certainly more than his own soul, as most of us love our children and would give ourselves gladly for them. But which one of us can imagine taking the life of our child and giving that life to God? And yet that seems to be the question that God is putting forth to Abraham. And I would say that there's a theological debate as to whether or not that it was simply Abraham's conscience that was pricking him as he dwelt in among the heathens who offered their children, and that it was just his conscience saying to him, Abraham, do you love Jehovah as much as you love, as they love Moloch? But I truly believe that God asked him that question. I truly believe that he heard the voice of God and that God put him through this trial. Now, that brings us to my next point, and I want to point out the very first verse of this chapter. And it says, and it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. Now, boy, that word tempt already, as soon as we hear it, it dwells up, it brings up in us a thought that just doesn't correspond with the God that we understand. God, why would God tempt us to do something that was wrong? Well, part of it goes back to the translation. And we're going to look at that in just a moment. But that's a question I'm certain that comes to all of our minds. I know it comes to my mind over the years as I've read this passage many times in the Bible as we read about God tempting. But, you know, there's a deeper answer to this. And as I thought about this and studied about this week, God already knew the outcome. God already knew the outcome. And whatever mechanism that God might use was fully within his power to do so. And I believe that that's what he was doing. He knew what the outcome of this was going to be. And so it's not a contradiction of God's character, but it was a means that God was using to strengthen Abraham. And that's where this word tempt comes in. As I began to study this word, I wondered why they didn't use the word test or prove. Because if you look up the Hebrew word is nosal, and it is a primitive word, meaning that it's a base word, and it means to test, assay, like you would assay gold to find out its purity, or to prove. And so you wonder, why didn't the King James translators use the word prove, that God was proving Abraham, or that he was testing Abraham to determine the strength of his purity? In either case, it makes more sense to use that word. Now, I looked up that word, attempt, in the 1826 Webster Dictionary, because I wanted to see how that word, what it meant to them, because we know that words change and their usage changes. For instance, if I had, if we use the word, and I've used this as an example before, if we talk about a young man being gay, then we're immediately going to think that he is a homosexual. But that's not what the word originally meant. And so it behooves us to study and to understand the what the words meant as they were used. And so in 1826, when Webster wrote the definition, it was pretty much the same for us today. Here's what Webster said about the word tempt in his dictionary. It says, to incite or solicit to an evil act, to entice to something wrong by presenting arguments that are plausible or convincing, or by the offer of some pleasure or apparent advantage as the inducement. Now, when you read that verse that says, and God tempted Abraham, and you take that definition of what we know that, that tempt means, it puts God in a bad light. It almost puts God in an evil light, that he was tempting Abraham to do something that was morally wrong. But we know God is not that way. And so therefore, there's got to be a better answer than for us to just assign that character to God, and yet that's what many people do. They won't look a little deeper. Now, if you look at all the other translations, and I mean all of the other translations beyond the King James, you'll find that they use the word test or prove or something of that nature, but not the word tempt. As a matter of fact, the majority of them use the word test, that God tested Abraham. Now, let's see what Webster said about the word test. He said it is to compare with a standard, to try, to prove the truth or genuineness of anything by experiment or by some fixed principle or standard, as to test the soundness of a principle, to test the validity of an argument. Now, isn't that what God was really doing with Abraham? He was testing or putting to the test the soundness and the validity of his profession to love God. And so, now that I can understand about God. And it makes perfect sense that God would put to the test the profession that we make. When we say we love God, and that God tells us that we should love him first and beyond all things, thou shalt love the Lord God, thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, it's not unreasonable that God would put that statement to the test to see how pure that it was. And so I can see that with Abraham. So I don't like that word tempt at all. But you know, there is a reason why the King James people didn't use that word. And so I got to studying deep, and I didn't know this until this week, as this kept troubling me, and I kept studying. And do you know that if you read through all of the King James Bible, read through every passage in it, you will not find the word test used in the King James Bible. It's not there. And I wonder, why wouldn't that be the case? Why wouldn't they use that word? Well, it's the same principle as us being careful how that we use the word gay because of what that word means. And did you know that there was in England a set of laws called the Test Act? Look it up. It was there. And I'm going to read you the definition. The Test Act is an English statute enacted immediately after the Reformation that excluded from public office, both military and civil, all those who refused to take the oaths of allegiance and supremacy, who refused to receive the communion according to the rites of the Church of England, and who refused to renounce belief in the Roman Catholic doctrine of transubstantiation, although directed primarily at Roman Catholics, it also excluded Protestant nonconformists. Now let's put this, you knew you couldn't get through a sermon without me giving you some history and trying to give you some background. And that's part of what I do, because we need to understand these things. What was the Reformation? Well, we know that the Reformation was when great protests were coming against the evils in Catholicism. But a big part of the Reformation was when King Henry VIII would not bow down to the Pope. And so what did he do? He broke off from the Roman Catholic Church and formed the Church of England. And set himself up as the head of the church, appointed the Archbishop of Canterbury as the head archbishop. And so they set up what we know today as the Church of England or the Anglican Church. And they set up a set of rules and regulations to follow by. And so the Test Act was anyone who wanted to serve in the government or serve in the military had to publicly denounce Catholicism and set themselves up in alliance with the Church of England. And so it was a very touchy situation, a very touchy subject. We know that the Reformation took place in the latter part of the 1500s. When was the King James Bible translated as we know it today? In 1620. And so they were very careful not to use the word test because that it brought to people's mind the Test Act, under which that they were under great penalty if they did not agree with the Church of England. And so when we put it in the context, that makes it a little easier to understand why that they use the word tempt as opposed to test. Now that may not mean anything to you, but I hope that you'll think about that and see the importance of us digging a little deeper rather than just assigning a character to God that may be misappropriated or misapplied simply because the word is not the same as we understand it. And so I find no problem whatsoever with the fact that God tested the soundness and the purity of Abraham's profession and belief in him, but I do not find that God tempted him to do something that was wrong. Even God's proposal was such that God knew the outcome of it. God knows your heart. He knows what you are, and he knows what you believe in your heart. And so the thought that God's opinion and knowledge of Abraham was derived solely from his response to this command is a misunderstanding of God. God knows all things. He knows the end from the beginning. Before God ever created the man, he had a plan of redemption. He knows what you're going to do before you do it. He knew exactly what Adam was going to do before Adam did it. And so he knew exactly what Abraham's response was going to be. And so this was not an experiment on God's part in order to know more about Abraham. God already knew everything about Abraham. And so there must have been a purpose in it. And that's what we're trying to find out, is what possible purpose could God have in testing Abraham to such a high degree? Well, first of all, I want to talk a little about the testing itself. It was twofold in nature. Think about yourself, and if you were put in that position, and I'm going to bring this down to reality here in just a moment. Think if you were put in that position. The testing was twofold. Jesus puts us to the same test. Oh yeah, Jesus puts us to the same test. What did Jesus say in the book of Matthew in the 10th chapter, 37th verse? He says, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Is that not what God was saying to Abraham? That if you love son or daughter, even Isaac, your only son, the one that I gave you, the one that you love with all of your heart, God says you must love me more. Jesus said the same thing. Now, Christians today seem to just kind of brush that aside. But Jesus identified himself with God the Father when he made the same claim and the same demand that if you're going to be one of my disciples, you must love me more than mother and father and sister and brother, yea, even son and daughter. No different claim, no different claim on our allegiance than what God put on Abraham. Now, let's put that in perspective again. God has not changed. Not yesterday, today, or tomorrow. God never changes. And so the demand that Jesus made of his disciples was not unreasonable. It was the same demand that God made of the father of our faith, the example of our faith, Abraham. The demand is to strengthen us, not in order to determine whether or not that we really love God, because he knows that. Jesus looks upon the heart just like God the Father looked upon the heart. And Jesus knows those that are his, and the foundation of God stand assured, having this seal, that the God, the Lord, knoweth them that are his. And so he already knows who we are and what we are. And so the purpose of this testing has got to be for our benefit and for the benefit of those about us. Not for God's benefit, not for God to determine how faithful we are. He already knows that. And so the conflict that Abraham had was twofold. The conflict of the love that he had for his son, his only son, and the love that he had for God. He loved them both. He loved them both. It's like the old story that we've heard, that, you know, if you have four children and you're on a boat that wrecks and a life raft will only hold three of your children, which one are you going to leave behind? Well, you don't want to leave any of them behind because you love them equally, and you would probably stay behind and put them on that they might survive. And so it is that God so loved us, and so Abraham loved both. He loved Isaac, and he loved God. And so he had this mental torment that he must have gone through. Imagine, as he received this command from God, and 3 days' journey. He had a 3-day journey. I don't think he shared it with Sarah. I don't think whatsoever that he shared with Sarah what God had just told him to do. I think he bore the weight of that in his soul. But what did he do? He immediately picked up and started that journey. And he got all the things that were necessary. But imagine the conflict and the sorrow that was going on in Abraham's heart every step of the way of that 3-day journey, knowing that at the end of that journey, that he was going to have to give up the son that he loved, the son that he loved with all of his heart, but yet he still went on that journey. And so there was that one part of that conflict, was the love that he had for Isaac and the love that he had for God. But there was another part that was a conflict with him, I'm sure, and that was that the conflict in his own mind of the promise that God had already made. God had already made him promises on two occasions that out of his own bowels would come the promise of a redeemer. And God renewed that in this last part of the reading that we had. That God had promised that from him that there would come one that all nations would be blessed. I don't know that Abraham understood the full impact of that. But God had promised him that his posterity, that his offspring would be as the stars of heaven and as the sand of the sea in number. And that through him, that the one who would come would bless all nations. And yet, here he's commanded to take the life of the one through which the promise was to be fulfilled. Imagine the conflict that was going through Abraham's mind. His religion was truly put to the test and seemed to be pulling two different directions. On the one hand, he had the promise, and on the other hand, he had the destruction of the promise. How in the world do you resolve that kind of conflict that's coming on you? Well, Abraham resolved it. He resolved it, and I believe he resolved it because he really did love God with all of his heart, with all of his soul, and with all of his mind. And even though he could not understand the end from the beginning, he trusted God. And I will take you to that verse there that we just read, the fifth verse, where it says, "And Abraham said unto the young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and come again to you." How could you go and offer your son as a sacrifice and still come again? Abraham, I don't believe, maybe understood what God was going to do, but he believed God's promise that through this son Isaac, that God was going to bless all nations. And it was beyond Abraham's comprehension how that God would do that. But he believed it was going to happen. He believed it was going to happen. And yes, he was willing. He was really willing to offer Isaac up, because his heart was set upon God. Now, the New Testament and the writer of Hebrews gives us a little better understanding of that. In the book of Hebrews, in the 11th chapter, when it's talking about faith, the kind of faith that testing and trials produce is the kind of faith that Abraham had. And before we read that, I want you to realize this was at the end of Abraham's life. He was an old man. Isaac was a young teenager. If we understand the word translated child correctly, it means one who is entering adolescence or at that adolescent stage. And so he was a young teenager, no doubt, quite capable of overcoming his father physically if he so desired. But we understand that this trial came at the end of Abraham's life. He'd been through many trials. It was a great trial for him to get up out of Ur of the Chaldees and follow God into a land that he didn't know, into a place that he had yet to determine where it was going to be. But it was a test upon him to do that. A little further down the way, we find many more tests and many more trials that he went through. It was not too long before this, probably 13, 14 years before this, that he he was really put to another test. And that was, he actually did have another son. That son was Ishmael. God had given him Ishmael, and most of us know the story about how that happened. That Abraham and Sarah, not understanding or perhaps not fully trusting in God, devised a way to help God out. And so Sarah gave Abraham her handmaiden, Hagar, by which she bore Ishmael. But we find that when Isaac was born, that the son of the bondwoman could not dwell with the son of the free woman. And so he was cast out. And God said here, take thy son, thine only son. But it wasn't his only son, but it was the only son of promise. It was the only son that came from God. It was the only son through which the promise was going to be fulfilled. And all of his hopes and everything was upon him. And he didn't, upon Isaac. And even though Abraham did not understand the outcome, he still trusted God. And here's what it tells us in Hebrews in 11th chapter, 17th to 19th verses. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried — I like the fact that they use the word tried in Hebrews, but that's from a Greek word, which is almost equivalent to the Hebrew word, which they translated tempted. But then when we understand why they translated the word tempted instead of trial or test, but the translators in the New Testament used the right word. When he was tried, he offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. Sarah was past the childbearing age when Isaac was born. And so, as it were, he received him already by the miracle of God from a dead womb. And what would be such a small thing for God to raise him from the dead? And so I believe that Abraham had that in mind as he went up that mountain with that knife in his hand and with that wood upon Isaac's back. He was willing. He was really willing to take his life, because somehow God was going to work it out. He didn't know how, but somehow he knew that God was going to work it out. And so there's a great lessons of faith in here for us. I've already been longer than I intended to be. But there's some great lessons of faith in here for us that we need to grasp hold of. Because Jesus makes the same requirement of us that God made of Abraham. If you don't love me more than mother and father and sister and brother, yea, sons and daughter, you're not worthy of me. And so the same demand is upon us. If God says to you that to offer up your children — now, we know that God is not going to say to you to take their life. man has at least progressed a little bit, and I think due to this incident with Isaac, that man has at least progressed a little bit in his mind's formation that it's wrong to kill our children. Although they do it every day through abortion, and every day they take thousands and thousands of children's lives and offer them up to Moloch rather than to let them live. But somehow we've justified that in our mind by trying to pinpoint when life really starts, and that's a message for another time. I don't want to get on there. But the great lesson of faith, of true faith, is, and here it is, obedience is complete when inward surrender is complete. When you are truly surrendered in your heart to the will of God, the outward action is simply an outplay of what's already taken place in the heart. And God is a discerner of the thought and the intent of the heart. And so we find that that's what is really takes place, is when true surrender takes place in the heart. The outward action is only a visible testimony of what has already been surrendered in the will. You see, if man is anything, he is free will. He has a will of his own. And that's what God wants. He wants our will surrendered to him at all costs. And only God can do that. And all this testing and all of these things that come our way are for our benefit and for the benefit of those around us, to strengthen us and to validate our profession to ourselves as well as those who look upon us. When we say we love God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, and all of our might, God might put you to the test to see if that's really true. And so each one of us will go through various and sundry trials as we go along. And you know what? They might get harder as you go, just as they did with Abraham. A war does not necessarily mean that the hardest battle is going to take place at the beginning of the war. The hardest battle may take and likely will take place at the end, just as it was with Abraham. And so I want to recount you just a little bit of personal story, not to build myself up, but to let you know that this is the way God works in all of our lives, one way or another. God is going to put you to the test to see if you really, really will, if you really love him. For me, there were a couple of occasions. One I've told you about before, and that is when I couldn't find a church to go to. I knew that there had to be right people. I knew that God still had a church out there somewhere, but the one that I was going to, I knew wasn't right. I just knew it wasn't. And I called out to God. I sat in my chair at home, and I called out to God, and I meant it from the bottom of my heart. And God knew I meant it. I will quit my job. I will sell my house, which we had worked hard to build and which was really important to us. I will sell everything I've got, and I will go anywhere that you can take me, to a people who worship you from the bottom of their heart and where that I know that you're present. And within two weeks of that surrender, I met Brother Jerry Reynolds. And I only had to travel 50 miles to where that there was a little church out there in Elizabeth. And as soon as I walked in that door, as soon as I met Brother Reynolds, and as soon as I walked in the door of that church, I knew it was right. He did not require me to uproot and go somewhere else, but he did require me to fully surrender my will to him. And when that happened, then God's reward was, here's what you needed, and you didn't have to travel all over the world. Now, that was a pretty hard test for me. I'm thankful that God led me to Brother Reynolds and to the church there at Elizabeth. But there was a harder test coming down the road. For it was just a few years later, that I got the call, just as Abraham got the call. You love your home, you love your job, you love your family, you love all these things that you have, which I did. And God said, now I want you to sell it all. I want you to uproot and go to Australia. Now, you can imagine the conflict that I had. And I did have a conflict. There was a struggle that was inward to give all of that up, to quit a job that I'd worked at for 20-some years, the security that I had. We had a good income. But to leave it all and go somewhere where I didn't even know how I was going to live, or how I was going to provide for my family. Again, I'm not trying to build myself up, but there's going to be a point to this in a moment. But the test was there. I hadn't even told my wife any more than Abraham had told Sarah what was required. But it came down to a point where I had to tell her. I think it was in a Sunday night service that I announced to the church that the Lord had burdened my heart to go to Australia and to quit and to go to Australia. Well, you can imagine how my wife felt. And so there was the outward struggle. The inward struggle was there, but there was the outward struggle. We'd been raised there where that we lived. We met in high school. That was our home. And I'm asking her to get up and go to the other side of the world, not knowing what's over there, not knowing what God is going to do. And there was a big struggle. And at one point, I thought, and this is no blame to my wife whatsoever. At one point, I thought that I was going to have to leave her behind and go, but I had to go. I couldn't not go. And I struggled with it, and she struggled with it. And I thank God for her, because at the end of the day, she knew I would not do this unless that I felt God was leading me that way. And so uprooted and left. And it seemed as though all was lost. It truly seemed in my mind in some ways that all was lost. My job was gone. My home was gone. We hadn't any more than got to Australia. Then Nicole just could not manage. She was 16 years old. We had to send her back to America to live with her grandmother and separate her from our 16-year-old daughter. Our son didn't like it there. He just turned 18 and said, "I'm going back to America and join the Navy." We lost our children. Virtually lost them, but yet we could not leave. We could not leave. And so it seemed as though all was lost, but God was faithful. God was faithful. And I'll tell you what happened. I'm going to tell you that there were rewards. There were rewards that we couldn't imagine that God was going to give us, but He did. And one of those rewards was, well, I'm telling you, my daughter got strong. She got strong being on her own, seeing her way through the last 2 years of high school, standing up for herself, because she was the most timid little thing you ever saw in your life. But she was put in a position where that she had to be strong. And tell you what, she's strong today. She's strong today. And I think that had a lot to do with it, because at that age where she needed to get self-confidence and to be able to stand up for herself, she was able to do that. Our son, we didn't know what was going to happen to him. And so our marriage got stronger in Australia. At the point here where that it was weak or tested and tried, it got stronger in Australia, because it was just me and her. It was just me and her alone over there. Even though we had a wonderful church and people that loved us, it wasn't the same. Her father died while we were over there, and her mother had a heart attack, and just all kinds of things went on. But our marriage got stronger as we were in Australia. And so God rewarded us in that way. He knew the thoughts and intents of our heart. And the one thing that... I'm not even going to go into the finances of it. I'm not even going to do that because we didn't know. I took that church over there and went to Australia, took that church and never even asked them what they paid. I didn't know if they paid anything. Didn't matter. I had to go to Australia. I had to leave, and God would take care of it. I had quit my job. I was like Abraham and Sarah. I was trying to work out a way for this all to work, and so I had devised with my company to transfer me, and I was going to have a job, so I was going to be taken care of. But as things worked out, I had to quit that job because I ended up pastoring a church with a school in it, and I never once asked them what they paid. It didn't matter. God was going to take care of it. And I tell you what, we came back with more than we left with. And God, the job that I quit, retired from, that I thought that I was never going to be able to reap the benefits of retirement from that, God has really blessed us through that retirement of that company and through our insurance and things that we have now. Our children that we thought we lost and would never see again, our son was off in Japan at that point for a four-year hitch. We didn't see him for 4 years. Our daughter came down here to school and married Robert Lucas, and he was down here when we were up there, and we thought we'd never see our children again or be a family again. Guess what? They're all within 5 miles of each other. We see our children every day. We see our Cam, our son, and his family. We all live together right here. We could never have imagined that God would have blessed us in the way that he has. But you know what? God knew the heart. And here he put us to the test. And just as Abraham took the knife and was willing, are you willing? And that's what I'm going to leave you with. I'm going to leave you with that question. Are you willing? Are you really willing for whatever he might ask you to do? Whatever he might ask you to do. And whatever he's asking you to do, it's to make you stronger. It's to make you stronger so that the next trial, the next purification that comes along will make your faith even stronger. He would never put anything upon you or ask you to do anything that would hurt you. That's how much he loves us. And that's how much he loved Abraham. And Abraham's faith strengthened him and is the strength of all of us. And I'm going to leave that lesson with you. And I'm going to leave that, Brother Jeff or Brother Jake, if you'll get a song. I'm going to leave that with you. Are you really willing to love and serve the Lord with all of your heart? Or are you just giving him lip service? Prove it. If you really love him, prove it. When he asks you to do something, if it's to be the church treasurer, if it's to be the church janitor, if it whatever that it is God is asking you to do, are you willing to do it? And if so, prove it. Prove it. If you love him and he said to you to join this church, prove it by coming to church. Prove it by putting him first. That when you get up on Sunday morning, you don't look for another excuse to be off doing something else. Prove that you love him by coming where he sent you to come. And so I believe that's one of the lessons certainly that we learn from this issue or this great story of Abraham and Isaac. Brother Jeff, I'll leave the message with you.
We'll get the blue book. Tomorrow we'll do page 88.